Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Wednesday, the 6th of April. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Wanjiro in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South Africa's parliament debates the impeachment of President Jacob Zuma.
It will be recorded that ANC members of this parliament chose to defend a crooked, broken president instead of the constitution and the rule of law.
The ICC drops charges of crimes against humanity against Kenya's deputy president William Ruto. There have been mixed reactions from Kenya.
I am not happy about the ruling of the ICC because there are people who suffered. So when everybody is set scot-free, who then is going to take all the blame?
These stories and more on this edition of Africa Link. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in South Africa, where a heated debate over a motion to impeach its president, Jacob Zuma, took place on Tuesday. Zuma has survived another move to remove him from office after yet another stormy session. The National Parliament, where the ruling ANC has a large majority, rejected the opposition motion to impeach Zuma. The opposition launched the motion following the ruling by the Constitutional Court last Thursday that Zuma had violated the Constitution by failing to implement the public protector's recommendations on the Nkandla scandal. Zuma has apologized for failing to uphold the Constitution and has agreed to pay back millions of non-security upgrades at his Nkandla home state. Subri Govender reports.
Can I just sit down, please? I want you to raise the order.
Hey, man, I'm not going to sit down, right now, man.
Sit down, all right?
The debate in South Africa's National Assembly was marked by heated exchanges, loud interjections, and robust interactions between members of the opposition and the ruling ANC. All the opposition parties called for Zuma to be sacked because he had clearly failed to uphold, defend, and respect the Constitution, as the Constitutional Court ruled on Thursday last week. The fiery leader of the economic freedom fighters, Julius Malema, told the assembly that ANC members would be doing the country a great disservice if they continue to allow Zuma to remain in office. Malema said while Zuma had apologized for failing to uphold the constitution, he did not take the honorable action to step down from office.
The judges were clear that the president and this parliament engaged in an unlawful activity. And we cannot behave as if the court has not pronounced itself. Now the court has made it very clear who messed up. You want us to continue as business as usual. The Speaker of Parliament doesn't get removed. The President remains. The legal advisors of the President remains. Even after that Constitutional Court, no single individual has been held accountable.
The leader of the official DA opposition, Musi Maimani, who led the call for Zuma's impeachment, was just as vociferous when he said Zuma had overstayed his time in office. Maimani told the House that Zuma had lost his moral authority to still remain as president.
Speaker, this is no longer the organization that produced leaders like Albert Luthuli, Oliver Tambo, Walter Sisulu, Nelson Mandela, and Ahmed Kathrada. The ANC has been reduced to what Thabo Mbeki called an ignoble, blood-sucking, and corrupt parasite.
Despite the clear evidence that Zuma had failed to respect, uphold, and honor the democratic constitution, the ruling ANC members came to his defense and outvoted the motion for Zuma's removal from office. The ANC members said they would not allow the opposition to dishonor their leader. The Deputy Minister of Justice, John Jeffrey, became the first ANC member to come to the defense of Zuma.
The president acted in good faith and in the justified belief that he was entitled to do so in terms of the constitution. So his failure to fully implement the recommendations of the public protector or to take the report on review was on the belief, for which there was considerable support at the time, that remedial action was not binding.
Another ANC member, Paul Mabi, was just as militant in support of Zuma.
The Constitutional Court did not rule that the National Assembly and the President had seriously violated the Constitution. So, in truth, there was no basis for this disparate motion. fact, the Constitutional Court recognized that the president also had constitutional rights, which he was entitled to exercise when confronted with the Public Protector's report. The president did that.
The debate was earlier delayed for more than an hour after the opposition parties called on the Speaker, Balaka Mbete, to vacate her position for the duration of the debate because she was a party to the crime. This was the heated exchanges between the Speaker and Malema.
Emma, take a seat.
No, but I want to speak. I can't be called by you to sit down.
Immediately after they lost the vote, the opposition party members walked out of the assembly after accusing the ANC members of being traitors to the cause of the people. The decision by the ruling ANC to retain Zuma will not only disappoint civil society in general, but also scores of veteran political leaders and struggle heroes of the ANC. Prior to the parliamentary debate, the struggle stalwarts said Zuma should have submitted to the will of the people who called for his removal. The decision will also definitely cause further divisions within the ruling ANC and between the ANC and its alliance partners, especially the South African Communist Party. The Communist Party called on the ANC to take decisive action to protect their own image.
Subri Govender reporting. In order to take a closer look at that story, I turned to Andrew Feinstein. He is a former South African politician who served as a member of parliament for the ruling ANC in the late 1990s. However, he is deeply critical of the ANC and its political culture. I asked him whether the Constitutional Court ruling against Zuma was sufficient grounds for him to resign.
Yes, absolutely. I think if you have the situation where a head of state violates the country's constitution and in addition to which actually lies in doing so, that should certainly be the basis for an immediate resignation.
Why didn't he resign?
Because I think that what has happened in the case of President Zuma is during his time in office, he has begun to believe that he is bigger than the state and that the state is there for his own benefit. And I think that arrogance has led to a situation where he thinks first and foremost of what is best for him and his family, and only secondarily what is good for the country. So I think it's a combination of arrogance and a sense that he is above the law.
Okay, so how do you assess the level of discontent with Zuma within the ANC?
Well, I think what is interesting in South Africa at the moment, I was there a couple of weeks ago, and the general discontent in the population with Zuma as president is probably at its highest level ever. But crucially, it's what happens within the ANC that is most important. And I think that President Zuma still has some control within the ANC. He is a very, very powerful figure within the party. Many people who are in key positions in the party have benefited from his material patronage, in addition to which he retains control of the state intelligence agencies, which within internal ANC politics are extremely important. But at the same time, having said that, there are perhaps public statements from particularly veterans of the ANC, which is an extraordinarily unusual situation. So you've had a situation where the Mandela Foundation, the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation, have come out publicly stating that they're extremely worried about what is happening politically in South Africa. And you even had a situation where Ahmed Kathrada, an ANC veteran who spent 22 years in jail on Robben Island with Mandela, who was Mandela's political advisor when they came off the island and when Mandela was president, he has now said publicly that President Zuma should resign. So I think we're starting to see some very real discontent from highly respected people within the ANC. And this could cause other people within the party, people who might even be within the leadership of the party currently, giving them the courage to speak out against the president in the near future.
Can you say that this has grown louder since the Constitutional Court ruling?
Oh, absolutely. I think that two factors have really contributed to this in the short term. The first was when it became public knowledge in South Africa that a family who run a series of businesses in South Africa, an Indian family called the Guptas from India, but now based in South Africa, had actually been offering cabinet positions to various politicians quite directly and unashamedly on behalf of the president. This created huge disquiet in South Africa. And because this family and their businesses have benefited hugely from state contracts, have made billions of rands from state contracts, this was already creating disquiet. But then for the highest court in the land to say that the president and the National Assembly, the parliament, have violated the constitution, have undermined the constitution, I think that added extremely significant momentum to the disquiet, both in the country as a whole and within the ANC itself.
But Zuma still appears invincible. Why is this?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons. First of all, the leader of the ANC, given its history as the liberation movement that led to the end of apartheid, that was responsible for democracy in the country, the leader has enormous power. The leader really influences the tone and the values and the ethics of the organization. That's the one reason. The second reason is that in the case of Jacob Zuma, who has for many, many years now been using the state to his own and his family's and his immediate political clique's material benefit, that engenders a degree of loyalty as well. When you are benefiting from somebody being in power, you are highly likely to remain loyal to them.
I was speaking to Andrew Feinstein, former ANC member and executive director of Corruption Watch in the UK.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Cameroon says multinational joint forces fighting the Boko Haram insurgency have arrested over 300 Boko Haram fighters and freed at least 2,000 people from the Islamist militant stronghold on the Cameroon, Nigeria, and Chad borders. This took place within 5 days of an operation to flush out the militants. Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and Benin have contributed about 9,000 troops to the fight against the six-year insurgency. More than 1,000 humanitarian workers have also been deployed. Moki Kinzeka reports from Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
Members of the multinational joint task force fighting the Boko Haram insurgency sing what is now their regular song after what appears to have been a successful operation. They have just returned from the Nigerian locality of Walasage, some 35 kilometers to the north of the town of Kumshi, where they say they have scored a major victory against the terrorists. Cameroon-born General Buba Dobekreu, one of the commanders of the armed forces, says they killed hundreds of the fighters, freed over 2,000 people in 17 villages, and arrested more than 300 Boko Haram fighters.
Our soldiers destroyed a Boko Haram logistics base and training center, vehicles and motorcycles, seized huge stocks of weapons and other war equipment. We are now ready to go into the hinterlands where they are found to completely do away with them.
Among the close to 1,000 soldiers who took part at the raids since last Friday is 25-year-old Eyong Levis. He says he encountered a landmine with five of his colleagues, but fortunately, none of them were killed.
Where I am now, I'm getting better, and I'm determined that when I'll be strong, I have to go there because those men, they're not armies, they're just rebels, and I'm determined to finish with them. I hope that by the end of this year, Boko Haram will be history.
People freed from Boko Haram strongholds were handed over to the Nigerian army. Some of them, like Beya Jude, a 47-year-old father of four, preferred to cross over to Cameroon and be taken to the refugee camp at Minawawu. He says he decided to leave because Cameroon and Nigerian soldiers killed so many people in his village during the raids.
On Saturday in the morning, they called us. We gathered our children, our wives and others. I brought my family on.
Raids organized by the multinational joint task force since December last year have increased the number of internally displaced persons in Cameroon from 100,000 to 170,000. The number of refugees entering Cameroon has also increased from about 40,000 to over 60,000 in 4 months.
Moki Kinzeka reporting.
Behind the headlines.
In this week's Behind the Headlines, we visit Ghana. Ghana is a historical place in West Africa. It attracts thousands of tourists each year. But some of the tourist attractions could soon disappear if the country's historical sites aren't protected and maintained. These sites date back to colonial times. DW's Isaac Kaleji reports that the capital, Accra, particularly, they are in a deplorable state of repair.
This is the sound of trucks and motorcycles in Jamestown, Ghana's capital Accra, home to many historical edifices. Ghana's first hotel, the Sea View Hotel, which hosted the Queen of England, Elizabeth II, during her historic visit in 1961, was built here. One of the oldest forts in the country, the Osha Fort, is also situated in this community.
These are historical things we have in the community here. We have the lighthouse and the main fishing harbor of Jamestown and James Fort prisons. Even you can see at the back of you, we have first ever hotel in Accra, the Sea View Hotel.
A tour guide called Nice One knows his way around the tourist attractions in this community. Although happy about his job, he is saddened by the current state of decay of many of these historical sites.
Sea View Hotel, named by Queen Elizabeth, but just a few days ago, the owners of the land just come and demolish it and sell the land to a church people.
Residents are unhappy too. Clinton Ofori is one of them.
Me, I feel pity. Yes. Because this hotel is the first hotel in Ghana. And this building has been collapsed. I'm even shocked that this hotel can be collapsed.
A lighthouse situated close to the sea in an area notorious for slave trading, in the past is also being left to rot. The tower hasn't seen any maintenance for years. The same goes for the Osha Fort, which served as a prison for Ghana's first president, Kwame Nkrumah, and other prominent freedom fighters. Tourism analyst Neil Kwate Boy Koti is appalled by the neglect of these facilities.
It is so unfortunate that they have to demolish such historical buildings like the Sea View, the hotel. Queen Elizabeth came down and slept. This edifice should have been kept. When people come down here, we're going to earn something out of it, and the people over here are going to be blessed with it. It is so unfortunate again for us to see James Fort prison being wasted. No tourism here, things are not going on well. Ghana Monument or Tourist Board or whoever is in charge of these things should really sit up. These edifices are being wasted.
These narratives don't speak well of the tourism industry in Ghana, especially when the country is hoping to rake in over $8 billion yearly by 2027. This is on the back of an estimated 4.3 million international tourist arrivals. This estimate could be missed if existing sites aren't maintained.
Isaac Kaleji in Accra, Ghana. Judges at the International Criminal Court declared a mistrial in the case of Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto, throwing out the charges he faced over post-election violence sparked by the December 2007 elections in Kenya. Ruto and his co-accused Joshua Arap Sang had submitted a plea that the charges against them should be dismissed. Both deny the charges of crimes against humanity, that's murder, forcible deportation and persecution, that were brought against them. The judges said political interference had made a fair trial impossible, but left open the possibility of a fresh trial. A parallel ICC case against President Uhuru Kenyatta was also dropped in December 2014. Kenyatta said he was delighted with this latest decision. I spoke to DW's James Shimanyula, and he tells us what this ruling means for the accused.
Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto and the journalist that he was charged with are free people, although there is room for the chief prosecutor of the ICC, Bensouda, Fatou Bensouda, to pursue the matter and probably reopen the case. But the chances of the ICC chief prosecutor doing just that are actually almost or virtually nil, to the extent that where is she going to get new evidence to be adduced in a court when there was plenty of time for the prosecution to investigate and bring concrete evidence that would have sustained a case to answer against William Ruto and his co-accused. So what I can only add there is that Ruto is as free as President Uhuru Kenyatta has been since the case was dismissed a couple of months ago. One very important point to be borne in mind is that there is no way that the prosecution can gather evidence now in Kenya and get witnesses giving strong testimonies.
Can you tell us what the people in Kenya have been saying about this case?
Briefly, they have been happy because of the decision, and others have just wondered what will happen to the victims of the 2007 violence that gave birth to the case against Ruto and the journalist Sang. So it's a kind of mixed comments. Some say, well, the courts have decided. Others say, what about the victims of the violence? Will justice be meted to the people that offended them? But it's too little too late because the court has just made its decision.
I am not happy about the ruling of the ICC because there are people who suffered. People lost their families, their kids, their livelihoods. So when everybody is set scot-free, who then is going to take all the blame? I would not say that I'm happy that everybody has been acquitted. We at least needed one or two people to answer for everything that happened.
Those were Kenyans talking to DW about the ruling passed at the ICC. And I was speaking to James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Opinion.
Earlier in the program, we reported on South Africa and the motion in Parliament to impeach President Jacob Zuma. What are your thoughts on the outcome of the debate? Do you think the decision not to impeach Zuma was the right one? What could it mean for South Africa's future? We've also been reporting on the court ruling at the ICC in a case against Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto. Do you think it was right for the court to dismiss this case? Do send us your opinion on one or both of these stories, either in a text message to country code 49160957595 10, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter, dw.com/AfricaLink.
And now a reminder of our main stories. South Africa's parliament has voted against an opposition motion to impeach President Jacob Zuma. The multinational joint task force fighting Boko Haram says it has arrested 300 fighters along the Cameroon-Nigeria-Chad borders. And the ICC dismisses the case against Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto on charges of crime against humanity. Do join us again same time tomorrow. I'm Eunice Wanjiru in Bonn, and bye for now.